Here we go.
Welcome to BP Wrigley Cast, the podcast that talks about the Cubs on occasion and brings you anywhere from two to four baseball writers to talk about something that we all love, which is baseball. My name is Ryan Davis, currently of FanRag Sports and 2080 Baseball, and coming soon to the Sporting News. And I'm joined by Isaac Bennett of BP Wrigleyville. How's it going, Isaac?
It's going well, Ryan. Congratulations on your new gig with Sporting News. That's pretty awesome stuff.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, it's a big step for me. But yeah, this isn't about me. This is about the Cubs, damn it.
Thank God.
It's been like forever since we recorded, as our many fans, all three of them, have pointed out on Twitter. And I guess the best thing we could say, other than the fact that busy schedules have kind of consumed us all, is that maybe we just didn't want to talk about how bad the Cubs were going for a while. But minus the fact that they had a game against Milwaukee rained out, things are starting to look better. Notice I kind of threw in a jab there. It wasn't actually rained out.
That whole story had to be the most insufferable thing I've ever seen. I can't fathom anything more pedantic or worthless to discuss than Theo Epstein trying to rig things around the weather. Seriously, there was nothing logical or interesting about it for even a second.
Yeah, the argument that I heard from, the one Brewers beat reporter who was really pushing it, and then like all the Brewers fans who had jumped on because, the world is against the Milwaukee Brewers, was that it's not a Theo Epstein thing. It was a Joe Madden thing, because according to them, this is totally a thing that Joe Madden would do to get an advantage.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think he really has much say over that kind of thing at all. But it's ridiculous is what it is. He just wants to get the games out of the way. Let's be honest. I don't know. Like I said, not interesting.
Yeah, I'm not. I can understand why fans might want to jump on a conspiracy theory like that. But, I'm just not. I'm not buying it. But anyway, Cubs are 5-2, I think, over their last seven games, something like that. So that includes a sweep of the Cincinnati Reds. So things are starting to point upward.
Yeah, the Reds have kind of become that team that just always correct course for the Cubs, especially offensively. It's interesting because I remember a time when the Reds seemed like, a team that had the Cubs number maybe 10 years ago and you never wanted to play them. But now anytime you go into their ballpark or at home, it's like, we're going to have a couple 9-run offensive outputs here and probably a 6-run output, and we'll see if they can outslug us one game. But it's pretty fun to play them at this stage.
Yeah, with the small sample size of games against the Reds this year and how they put up runs in those games, I'd be really interested in going and looking at Cubs runs per game against the Brewers and then runs per game against everybody else, because I feel like there'd be a massive difference.
Against the Brewers, against the Reds?
I'm sorry, I meant against the Reds. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know the exact stat. I haven't looked at it, but I do know that what you just suggested is absolutely true to a hilarious extent where – they're averaging like 7 runs a game against the Reds and, around 4 against everybody else. So I think that does speak to both the Reds pitching staff and just the fact that the Cubs have an extreme amount of confidence against that team. So it's fun to play the old Red leggings.
Yeah, I guess I said Brewers because I've got Brewers on the mind with the quote-unquote rainout. And then the one game that they did win in that, abbreviated two-game series against the Brewers was Jake Arrieta on the mound, and he threw 111 pitches, which I was perfectly fine with considering how well he was going. And 6 innings, I think he gave up 5 hits, an unearned run, 5 strikeouts, and either 1 or 0 walks. I can't remember, but overall looked good. And I remember hearing that there was some mechanical change going on with him between that start and the one prior where he had made some sort of fix. I'm not suggesting that Arrieta is, I'm stamping my approval and saying all better, like everything's fine. But let's look forward a little bit and say, if he can give you this kind of 6 innings, good start, occasionally the quality start, I guess we'll say, from this point forward, and is maybe not 2015 Arrieta, but just a good pitcher, which his stuff, you know, should equal to. How does that change the plan going forward for the rest of this year for the Cubs? Because in my mind, if Arrieta is broken, they have to make a deadline deal for a pitcher. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah. I don't, you know, Arrieta, 2015 Arrieta is never coming back. And that's because it was an historically great season that basically nobody's ever seen before, especially his run, you know, the second half of 2015. So he's more the pitcher he is today, probably, than he is that pitcher. And, you know, I think this is actually correlative to the team itself, where they started 25-6 last year and people built up these expectations. But the reality is nobody is a 25-6 team. And, you know, it's always more normal, even for a great team, to play two games over 500 than to play 19 games over 500 in a 31-game span. So what we're seeing out of Arrieta is within the error bar of who he is, I would think. And, you know, the mechanical side of it is complicated because he has one of the most complicated deliveries of any starting pitcher. And it's one of the reasons that I didn't advocate signing him long term for what it will take, is because it's just too easy for him to get out of whack, or I should say it's too hard for him to stay in good rhythm. So as far as whether or not his performance or his ironing out his mechanical bugs changes the way this team looks, I don't really think so, because I still think looking for starting pitching for this team is probably more about controlling a long-term starter rather than the last 3 months of this season. I still think there are internal options that they could look at. I advocate them trading for a controlled starter and have for a couple of years now. But if he is a good three, a middling, middle of the rotation guy, then yeah, I think it changes some things. If he's totally broken, they do need to go get somebody. I've never felt like he was totally broken. I felt like he was just a little bit off. Either way, though, I mean, I think they still need to be looking for controlled starting pitching. I guess what's interesting to me is, who are they going to go get, and who do you see going the other way in a deal?
Yeah, I was going to go to that next. We've seen what the prospect cost can be for, for younger pitchers, especially ones with, you know, a lot of control. I mean, Chris Sale is the extreme example, you know, younger guy, one of the best pitchers in the game, signed long-term on a very reasonable deal. So that was, you know, at the time, as far as starting pitchers go, probably the most or top three attractive assets in the game. So he commanded a huge return. You know, Moncada is, was the top prospect in the game and probably still is. And, you have Kopech and you have all the others that went over in that deal. We're not talking about trading for a guy like Chris Sale, but, you know, what about, just as an example, a guy like Chris Archer? Do the Cubs have currently in their minor leagues, calling Ian Happ a minor leaguer for now, do they have prospects that, that could net a guy like Chris Archer without touching the major league roster? I don't think they do.
Oh, I definitely think they do. I'm not sure it makes sense. Archer is one of those guys that I love, and always have loved. And part of it's probably back because he at one point was a Cubs farmhand and an Indians farmhand back in the day as well. But I think if they wanted to make a deal, I guess I'll make the assumption that you're not including Ian Happ in that. You know, you're including him in the major league side at this moment in time.
No, I was saying that I do include him in the minor league side, but the point that I'm making is, for just comparing it to what we see for different deals, comparatively for what Archer is as a starting pitcher and on a longer term deal, mm-hmm. Look what they had to give up to get Aroldis Chapman midseason last year. And that's what the market was. That's just what it was. Now think about how many starting pitchers with years of control in their prime will be on the open market in the middle of this year. The market will be somewhat similar in that they're going to have to pay a high price. I don't think Eloy Jimenez, Ian Happ, and Jamer Candelario gets you. I don't think it gets you Chris Archer. I think you have to include one of the players on the major league roster that maybe a lot of fans don't want to give up.
Yeah, I don't know. I will say this, though. The price that they paid for Aroldis Chapman, as everybody knows, is not correlative to what a starting pitcher market is going to be, because the Yankees saw completely irrational exuberance in regards to what the relief pitching market was. And it has absolutely no correlative effect to any other market that I've ever seen. It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. But when you look at a guy like Chris Archer, I actually think that if the Cubs went to the Rays and offered to empty their farm system, including Ian Happ and Eloy Jimenez and Jamer Candelario and maybe Dylan Cease and one more nice-ish piece, I think they'd be actually pretty stupid not to engage that. Because if they took that offer to the market and said, you know, we've got a top 10, a top 20 in Happ, probably a top 50 in Candelario, a huge upside starting pitcher in Dylan Cease, and another piece, beat it. And somebody beat that, that you've got to make that deal. At some point, the reputation of Chris Archer is way bloated beyond what his actual value to a baseball team is. And I think that a collection of players like that could be half of your starting team for 7 years. And the Tampa Bay Rays, being who they are, would need to consider that type of thing, because Archer himself is a guy with, you know, about 11 career WAR in 6 years. This is his sixth season, and he's not going to take anywhere himself. You have to maximize his value into a bunch of players that could be all-star level or above. So whether or not it gets it done is entirely speculative and not something I can answer, but the Rays should absolutely listen to that deal and then try and shop it if the Cubs were going to go make it. And for the record, I would not support the Cubs making that trade.
Yeah. And really my interest in this deal is the market as itself is, there will be a lot of teams that would be interested in Chris Archer. And you're right, the Rays would absolutely have to take that deal and shop it and see, you know, who could beat that and who would want to. And I think the list of teams that would want to would be very long. And there might be teams that are more desperate for, you know, for a controllable starting pitcher in his prime, like Archer or anybody else. That Archer is just the example that I came up with.
Sure.
But, yeah. You know, and that speaks to the issue is that I can't think of a ton of other in prime signed long term to reasonable deal pitchers that could possibly be available this year. So you could really have a seller's market on starting pitching like that. And it may just mean that if the Cubs want to make a move, they maybe make a move for a guy who's essentially a rental and try and pay a lesser price. But that's a different conversation.
It is. And I there's a big part of me that says that if those kind of deals aren't getting it done for starting pitching, then the market rational. Because at the end of the day, starting pitchers are still incredibly unpredictable, and emptying out a farm system for one arm is putting way too much risk on an asset that, you know, is just incredibly unpredictable. I mean, if you look at the top guys, so many of them are injured right now, and so many more will continue to get injured that, you know, if I'm the Cubs, I'm probably just going ahead and using my top guys for filling in holes, just like Ian Happ has done, and coming in and sparking the team. So unless the market cools down a little bit and people start valuing starting pitching more appropriately, I'm fine to stay on the sidelines.
Going forward a little bit, I want to get to Ian Happ again in just a minute, but before we get there, I want to talk about Ben Zobrist. He was dealing with a back issue and not playing every day for a while, and struggling at the plate quite a bit. I think he maybe in that struggle was going into the playing field, because we saw him not making some plays in the outfield. He's supposedly, according to Joe Maddon, healthy now. He's in the lineup every day. He's now leading off, and he is absolutely murdering the ball. I think he has a 430 something on base percentage over the last, you know, 10 days or something like that. Do you think that Ben Zobrist is kind of the key to this team? And by what I mean for that is, he's so versatile in that he can play second base and the corner outfield spots. He gets on base. He does have some power. He's a guy who can legitimately lead off or bat, you know, third, fourth, fifth, or sixth. Do you think that if Zobrist is going well, that could completely change the complexion of the Cubs team.
I do think it would change the complexion of pretty much any team because he's a guy with a 360 career on base. So even if he's just going average and doing what he does averagely, it's a 360 on base. And that's something that every lineup needs, especially when guys like Contreras and Russell and a few others, Rizzo to some extent, have scuffled. Schwarber is scuffled. So he didn't look healthy. And, you know, even now when I watch him play defense, and my brother pointed this out as well, he looks like an old man out there. So I don't even know if I would consider him versatile anymore. I think at this stage, you're actually trying to hide his glove around. Yeah, he can play anywhere, but he can't play anywhere well. So is that versatility? I don't know. But yeah, they need him in the lineup because his bat is still special. You know, he started horribly, but he's still been an above average hitter this year. And they just need him to get on base. I strongly support the leading him off mantra that they're finally approaching. Even though Joe is already saying, oh, Schwarber's still going to be our leadoff guy in the future. I don't know. I think that leading him off at this stage is probably the right spot for him, and he seems to be embracing it right now, so it's good to see.
Yeah, and really it's such a mental gymnastics that you have to go through in the whole Schwarber and the leadoff thing.
Yeah.
Because really, Schwarber was your leadoff man one at bat per game in the first inning. And then after that, Madden was batting the pitcher eighth. So you had either like John Jay or Albert Almora or some, you know, Javier Baez batting in front of Schwarber the second and third and fourth time through the lineup. Now you have Zobrist leading off and Schwarber second. But when Madden does that, he puts the pitcher ninth. So Zobrist is your leadoff man, top of the first inning, and Schwarber hits second. But again, back through the lineup, it's still Schwarber is the second batter after the pitcher. So it doesn't change a lot to me. The only thing that I can think that Madden might be trying to change here is something I've really gone after in the last couple of weeks, is the mental part of being the leadoff man and trying to change Schwarber's mindset about actually leading off, because I think that could have played some problems with what he was doing at the plate.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And I've long thought that one, Schwarber's mentality was probably built up too much. And I think he can handle a lot of pressure, but putting him in the leadoff spot to me was premature. And two, when he's scuffling for 6 weeks, give him a break. Like, everyone needs a break. And for anybody that's played, leading off has significantly more pressure than anywhere else in the lineup. There's no question about it. So give him a break, move him down. I will say that I know you've got the whole left, right, left thing, but I don't think until he has turned things around, and maybe he has, I don't know, but until he's turned things around, I don't think it makes sense to hit him second. I think it still makes more sense to hit Bryant, Rizzo 2-3, and then Schwarber 4. But again, it is kind of mental gymnastics, and the machinations of this lineup, honestly, are all pretty pedantic because there are so many good hitters, and pretty much any way you throw them out there, you can have a pretty respectable lineup. So I'm literally shrugging over here because I'm not sure any of it matters as much as maybe some of us, myself included, have made it out to matter.
Right. I agree with that too. And I do agree that I think Schwarber is probably better suited for his skills as fourth or fifth in the lineup, simply because I think he's better with, and I'm not talking about his statistics here, I'm talking about for his mentality. I think he would be better hitting with those guys on base ahead of him, rather than trying to get his mind around getting on base in front of those guys.
Correct. And I've always believed that that was true. And that was one of my biggest reasons about not leading him off in the first place.
Because, I mean, all of those guys have serious power, but, you know, if you have two men on with one out in front of Schwarber, you're obviously not trying to walk him to get to Addison Russell or,
right,
or whoever's next. So a pitcher is going to be more mindful of being in the zone. You have more of a chance of giving up a 3-run homer with Schwarber at the plate in that situation than, you know, a pitcher thinking, well, if I accidentally walk Schwarber on a 3-2 pitch that's, you know, low and outside, I'm going to deal with it and try and go after the next guy rather than give in to him and give up a leadoff home run to a game.
Just speaking of Schwarber home runs, I mean,
oh, yeah,
the one he was at yesterday, the day before, that thing last was night. Just assaulted on 476 feet or whatever it was. It was just, man, there are not that many guys who can hit a ball that far. And it is fun to see when he actually does it.
Yeah. All right. So we talked about Schwarber. We talked about Zobrist. The topic I wanted to go back to is Ian Happ. He's doing the whole I'm new up in the big leagues and I'm hitting 500 because nobody knows how to get me out yet. And I'm playing way above my head and everybody loves me and thinks I'm the next great prospect because they've seen me bat like 40 times. That is going to change at some point. Do you think now that they've sent Tommy La Stella down to keep him up, do you think he stays with the big league team the rest of the season? Or do you think once he starts to slump, he finds himself back in the minors?
I think he'll have another stint in the minors this year. There's another roster crunch coming. And frankly, Tommy La Stella is a guy that they probably need at the major league level. It's, you know, I think Madden's probably riding the hot hand. And there's nothing wrong with that. He has acquitted himself quite well in the majors and it's great to see. And, you know, he's not what he's shown to be. I think he is a good hitter, not a great hitter. He's hitting extra base hits like they're going out of style, which is really fun, and I've really enjoyed it. But I think there will come a time when he goes through a little bit of a prolonged slump as pitchers start to get the book on him and start to figure him out a little bit, and they'll send him back down and bring La Stella back up. But look, I hope he proves me wrong. I hope he continues to rake and, you know, hit extra base hits every day and stays up. But I would say that the odds are probably that he will go back down at some point.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I don't think this is a showcase at all, at least not in the intention. But I think it does kind of serve as one when you have such a crowded roster and you're talking about possibly trading for a starting pitcher. And really, if you are going to trade for a starting pitcher, I won't say that Ian Happ is going to be a better player than Eloy Jimenez, but for a team trading a starter, he might be the more attractive prospect at this moment. And, you know, if you strongly disagree with that sentiment, hear me out on it. He's much closer to the big leagues, and a small market team that's trading a popular starting pitcher, you know, really needs to bring back somebody that they can put in the lineup and say, look and see, this is the guy we got. And he's going to do this for us. No, maybe a guy like Jimenez down the road becomes the better player, but, you know, Happ being closer to the majors has the kind of higher floor that you're looking for.
Yeah, I think it just depends on the team. I don't think it's an outrageous statement, but say theoretically the Red Sox really continued to play poorly and found themselves 10 games back in July. I can see a team like that trading for Ian Happ because they clearly have other pieces that are good enough to become relevant very soon. So say they wanted to trade one of their starting pitchers and centered it around Happ. Totally get that. A team like the Rays, I would definitely go for Eloy Jimenez, where they're maybe not quite as close and they need higher upside. Jimenez is the guy I would be going for because I still think his upside is quite a bit higher than Happ's. So I think it's just about how close a team views themselves to being, you know, to mattering, to being in contention as to which guy you would choose. But, you know, I think Jimenez is still quite a bit more valuable.
Okay. Yeah. And I really agree with that. I do think he is overall the more valuable piece, but yeah, kind of what you just said, what I was trying to allude to was it's not necessarily a showcase for Happ, but there may be teams that are more interested in packaging a deal around him right now.
Sure,
For the reasons you laid out, than they would be for Eloy Jimenez, just because he's closer to the majors. And you know, he's showing what he can do. I mean, as a fan, I watch him play and I say, I don't want them to trade this guy. I mean, you know, this is a really great player, but at some point, a difficult decision is going to have to be made. And that's not necessarily to replace Jake Arrieta in theory, but going into next season, you have John Lester, who is great, and you have Kyle Hendricks, who has been kind of streaky. He's not been exactly the same guy this year, but he's been pitching better, and those are the only two you have. That's it. You have three rotation spots, and they're all question marks at this very moment. Eddie Butler has been you know, up. He's made two starts. One was very good. One was very bad. What is your thought on Eddie Butler as of right now, having seen him? And do you think his next start is an audition to keep the fifth starter spot?
Yeah, it's interesting. Actually, if I can go just one second to something else here that we touched on, Eloy Jimenez, really quick. I want to get your thoughts on, you know, he's only played 8 games since coming back in high A, but, you know, this is a guy that missed a month and then came back. In 32 plate appearances, he's only struck out 4 times in high A, which is a big jump and a tough Carolina league. So he's got a 438 on base and 556. So he's OPSing nearly 1,000 so far, a couple of home runs. And I don't know if you saw my tweet the other day, but on his home run, I screenshotted where his hips were when he got through. And for a guy of his size to clear that viciously and that open with his hips, I was really impressed about it. So anyway, I guess I'll answer your question now. Eddie Butler, I thought that his second start came in a really unfortunate circumstance with the really terrible weather that he faced, and he had a hard time controlling, and I think he got squeezed a little bit in that game by the umpire as well, if I remember correctly. I do think he's auditioning for a starter spot. I think he's going to win it both this year and moving forward, because I really like his stuff. I think Chris Bosio can straighten him out somewhat mechanically. I think he's going to be a starter for this team for a long time. Beyond that, yeah, there are a lot of question marks, and there's going to be some money spent in free agency. And like we said earlier, probably a trade at some point.
Yeah. And I know every time we get on this podcast once a month and start talking, we always end up talking about potential trades and fixing the rotation for 2018, which is probably shouldn't be our priority with our airtime is talking about the 2018 roster. But I guess going forward, knowing that you have to make all these decisions, is it smarter to make those decisions in July or just to wait and see how this pans out this year? I don't know if there's an answer to that.
Yeah, there's probably not one. I mean, the mantra was find pitching, and they've got to go out and they've got to find pitching, and it's constant. And you pretty much knew that that's what they were going to have to do when they committed all their most valuable draft picks to hitting. But on the other hand, it still plays out truer and truer every day that they made the right decision. I mean, look at the Mets. The Mets, everyone a year ago, everyone thought that they had more starters than they knew what to do with. And all of a sudden, they don't have hardly any, you know. So the health of guys like Lackey, Lester, Arrieta, and Hendricks, who take the ball every fifth day, shouldn't be underestimated, even if they're underperforming. They're still taking the ball. They're keeping the bullpen relatively fresh. The bullpen is a major plus on this team, which is good to see. They quickly rebuilt that. Looks great. So the health is huge. They're going to probably stay healthy with this group. And, 2018 will sort itself out at some point.
All right. My final point to you, and this is kind of old news that people were talking about for a while, and I don't remember even where it started, but it was the notion that either Kyle Schwarber or Javier Baez could be moved for pitching at some point, maybe not in the middle of this season, but at some point. And fans kind of, you know, obviously had the fan reaction to that ideal, you know, the World Series hero and the NLCS co-MVP, how dare you. But let's say that to get a starting pitcher that you want, that you absolutely need for the rotation going forward, one of those guys does need to go. And if you make that deal, you can realistically keep a guy like Ian Happ for the foreseeable future. In your mind, which one is it? Is it Schwarber or is it Baez?
Man, I don't think I would trade Javier Baez. He brings so much to the game that most players don't bring to it. I definitely wouldn't be trading either of those guys to keep Ian Happ around. I know that's not your broader point, but just to clarify, I would definitely not trade one of them to keep Ian Happ around. But right. If you're going to do that and you're going to trade one of those guys, to me, it's probably Schwarber. I wouldn't do it, but it's probably him because he does fit a lot better in the American League. There's no question about it. So I guess if forced to do one of the two, it would probably be Kyle Schwarber. How about you?
That's where I lean to. And the point that I make to somebody is, are the Cubs better off with, Schwarber in left field, Baez, wherever he is, Ian Happ and the minors are being traded as part of a package for, you know, a controllable starting pitcher, who knows who that may be. or are they better on the major league team if Schwarber is traded straight for, you know, one of the better pitchers in the game, which is his value at this point? Maybe not at the moment because he's been struggling, but, you know, if he hits like we think he will, and like, you know, some of the peripherals say he will, you know, are you better off doing that deal straight up and putting Happ in left field? I think you're better defensively, and I think you're better overall trading Schwarber at his value to the American League than you are trading either Javier Baez or Ian Happ away, just because of the difference that it makes. You know, Schwarber is, you know, like you said, a much better fit for an American League team. As much as he is loved within that organization and by the fans, and just for the general player that he is, he's the one that stands out like a sore thumb that just does not fit.
Yeah, and I think that there's a huge, and it was going all the way back to the Stan Zielinski and Theo Epstein chat about, you know, Epstein saying something to the effect of, let's stick in between Bryant and Baez and call it a day in regards to Schwarber, which there's a lot we could get into in that statement that's really interesting, but let's not go there for today. But he has to be a David Ortiz-like presence in the National League to really make it worth it. Maybe not quite that, but close, because he's a major liability in left field. And this team has so many good defensive players that an offensive player that purely brings offense is going to have to rake, and they're going to have to get on base. And as much as everyone wants to believe it, Kyle Schwarber has proven that he's going to do that consistently. I haven't seen it yet. And I think that he will. I think he'll be a great offensive player, but he's not there yet. I think that everyone is underestimating what Javier Baez brings at the plate. It's obvious what he brings in the field and some of the intangibles, but this is a guy that, even though he struggled early in the year, he's only striking out 23% of the time, and he's slugging close to 500. So here's a second base shortstop, versatile, could play anywhere player, slugging 500, not only striking out 23% of the time, he has 14 extra base hits and 135 plate appearances. Baez is bringing a ton to the plate, and people seem to forget that or ignore it. So Javi Baez is just not a guy I would trade, period. I've always felt that way, all the way back when we debated about Soler or Baez, who would you trade? I would never trade Javier Baez unless the deal was just a complete brainer. So if forced, it would be Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah, I looked it up while you were talking. As an outfielder, according to defensive runs saved, he is -6.
Yeah,
that's Schwarber. Very bad. You're talking, and this is what I say to all the Cubs fans who tweet me and say, well, you can live with him in left field. He's not average, but you can live with him. And that was something that I got from my original tweet, which was saying that I never hear from Cubs fans when he makes a bad play in left field. All the ones who laud him for making that one good play every once in a while and say, oh, Schwarber, he can play left field. And it's like, yeah, but he's really not a good left fielder. It's like, you know, Matt Holliday used to occasionally make a nice catch in left field. That doesn't mean he's a good left fielder. I mean, we know by the numbers and by our eyes that Schwarber is a bad left fielder. And if he's, like you said, if he's doing the David Ortiz thing, or even just hitting like a very good hitter, overall, you can probably deal with that. But, you know, there's a really good question about whether he can do that. A stat that I put in one of my most recent articles was, since 2010, there have been 44 players who qualified for the batting title who struck out 26% or more, I think was the number. And of those 44, only five posted an on-base over 340. So does that tell you the kind of player that Schwarber is going to be a high on base guy? It doesn't say that he necessarily won't be, but there's enough of a question there. And with that bad defense, I'm sorry, he's the one who just doesn't fit.
Yeah, I think I hear what you're saying is that he doesn't have to be traded, but if somebody was going to go in a huge deal for Archer or something like that, that's the guy that might make sense. And I agree with that. I don't want to see him traded, but it's funny regarding his defense, because the 2015 playoffs exposed him, and the national media jumped on and said, oh, look how awful he is. And then the pendulum swung and everyone jumped on the bandwagon of, oh, he's not that bad. It was a few games. Here's the fact of the matter. He's terrible in left field. and he's always been terrible in left field. And to your point, he is a major league athlete. And yes, he's going to make some good plays. Yes, he's going to make most of the routine catches, but he's probably a bottom five or bottom six left fielder and maybe lower. And he's probably never going to be a good or even average defensive player. So
I was going to say, you're right. And the case that I make to people is, how can you imagine him getting better than what he is now? The value that he does bring defensively in the outfield is the fact that he, surprisingly for his size, is fast enough that he can he can make up for some of his early mistakes by getting to a ball. That's why pretty much anytime you see a ball hit to his left or right, you might see a nice diving play or a nice running catch, because he can use that speed to make up for it. If he's backpedaling or coming in, that's when you see a problem. Now, being out there, or you know, being a guy who runs fast at his size, I can tell you that wears down your speed faster than the skinny little guy who sprints around the bases. So 2-3 years from now, that speed may not be the same as what it is when he's 23, 24 years old. He is not going to get better on defense.
No, he's not. I think he's, you know, maybe he gets a little more consistent, but you're right. Some of that makeup speed that he's got is going to go away. But I'll say this, there's no way I would trade him right now. Now is a very bad time to trade him. Wait till he gets hot. Wait till he hits 5 home runs in 3 games, or, you know, raises his average at least to 230, 240 and is on base to 340. You can't trade him now. His value's in the drop. So just wait. By the deadline, he'll be hitting better. And, you know, if there is a deal out there to be made, maybe you do that after a hot streak, but certainly not today.
This is all just hypothetical talk. I wanted to bring it up because I thought it was interesting, but I think we are on the same page. Neither of us are out there banging the drum saying trade Kyle Schwarber now or even soon. But this is just our way of telling you, the listener, that we do think Schwarber is the guy who maybe doesn't have the best fit among all the pieces that they have at the major league level.
And also our way of telling you that you should probably keep a closer eye on what Baez is doing at the plate.
Yeah. And I mean, that guy was a part-time player last year and was like a 3-4 win player. I mean, that obviously may not be something he repeats, but you know, he's a very valuable player, and the kind of special that you saw, especially in the postseason on defense, that'll make up for a lot of the occasional booted ball that you'll have from him when he makes those impossible plays that nobody else in the game can make at second base. And then that's not even touching on the power. So yeah, Baez is the one that I would keep of the two. I guess that's all I have, unless you have more you wanted to touch on.
Nope, good stuff. It's nice to get back on the air here to everyone. We apologize for how long it's been since we recorded, but we'll try and get on a little bit more consistent schedule here. It's been mostly my fault, so my apologies, and thank you for hanging with us, and we'll try and bring you some more fun arguments and good content moving forward.
All right, you can follow us on Twitter at BPWrigleyCast or email us bpwrigleycast@baseballprospectus.com. I'm Ryan Davis. Again, that's Isaac Bennett. I will talk to you later.
Take care.